not to recommend that they do it. Good? Okay. The next thing then is 12.62. Yes, my friend.
On this question of repossessions, which has come up in many different forums, is it something which between yourselves, between the Committee on Finance and Trade and Industry, that you would like to have a dedicated session on to actually hear more about specifically how that process is happening and what some of the problems are?
Yeah, we can do that, but it's not germane to the report. We do say, you see, firstly, we spoke to Minister, Deputy Minister Jeffrey. We spoke to his official. We put in the report the exact words the official gave us. We just truncated it. It was a whole page. I reduced it to about a third of a page, quarter page. And then Zakelia and I finally, between us and Joan, did the final text. Now, according to him, it's about to be gazetted. Deputy Minister Jeffrey says he'll come and address our committee. So we can do that at the same time. So, Alan, can you note that? That basically what we need is a meeting to pursue the matter further. But we're not budging on anything we've said. Okay, as long as that's agreed. Right. Saia says, on 12.62, that it doesn't support the suggestion that insurance companies should reimburse homeowners the installments they have paid if they end up losing their homes after all efforts to save them fail. We did not say this. We said consideration must be given to them.
Yes.
Right? Is that correct, Zakele?
Yes.
Yeah. So basically we stick by that, right? Maybe we can soften the wording because it must be realistic, but we're not saying that. We would like it to happen. Is there anything else members want to say on this matter, please? Yes, my friend.
Sorry, Chair. So the name is Caroline De Silva from the FSB, the Insurance Registrar, and I can't pretend to speak on behalf of Sahia, but I think their rationale would be that the basic fundamental tenets of insurance law is that it must be fortuitous, accidental, and not be able to be manipulated by the insureds or in the control of the insured. So I'm guessing that that's what their argument would be.
To inform us. What we are trying to say is we're not narrow populists, right? That we really want to be practical and pragmatic. It's no use having a wish list. Neither the state nor the private sector will pay any attention. So don't hesitate, please, the officials who are here, to give us information, to tell us about what's in one bill or act or another. That's useful to us. Ultimately, the decision is the politicians, having heard you. So on this one, we are not saying that, you see, I think if I'm right, Zakela, help me here. If I'm right, this is what we are saying. Obviously, you've got a text of the report next to you, and you can look it up yourself. But essentially, it's this, that where people lose their jobs and so on, right? And so on, the question is, how objective or subjective is that? So if you lose a job because you were skiving or not attending and so on, that's different, and then you can't pay. But if you lose your job because the mining industry collapsed and 41,000 workers lost their jobs in one quarter, is that a subjective thing? I mean, are you responsible for the global economy or the domestic economy? That's the issue. Now, obviously, you're going to say, what criteria? We are not prescribing anything. We're merely saying that morally and politically, this is what we think consideration should be given to. But over to you.
So, yes, Chair. So how the insurance industry would draft on a fortuitous basis to say, instead of saying you're covered for not paying your bond, they would cover you for a non-fortuitous event like retrenchment. So you'd have retrenchment cover, which would give you income replacement. So that's fortuitous, if you understand what I'm saying.
In a huff and a puff here. Sorry, want to say something?
I support the point you have already made. I think we're looking at very genuine circumstances. Of course, there'll always be chances, of course. But then you need to tackle that in another way and not penalise those who are genuine victims of a particular economic situation beyond their control. And that would be evident.
I can tell more what body will
Chair, I just say, let's just be rational. You know, you paid installments. Honestly,
now you're not wearing your political cap on here. You're a DDG. Now you're playing with irrational. Now you're going to raise the hackles
on
people.
I'm not saying.
Of course, you are saying be rational. What does that imply? That we're irrational. Derek, why are you keeping quiet? Because you're a buddy of this guy. That was before 1994. But anyway, go ahead.
I'm saying the points, Chair, that's made. That, you know, for any past installments to be paid back, and I mean, those things. There's contractual agreements. There's all kinds of things. It ain't going to happen. Okay, you can... I don't know where the point comes from or the suggestion, but I'm saying...
One or two of the participants, yes.
Yes. So, I'm just saying if you apply a rationality test to this point, it will just fall away.
Okay, somebody wants to say something? Who had their hand up? Yeah, you know what? Let me put this to you, right? We must come back to this point of we don't want a shopping list. It's not idealism here. Right? But on the other hand, we're not going to be intimidated. So why don't, I forget your name, my friend from the FSB, Caroline and Momo, try to strike a compromise between what we have and what you want. We'll look at it, Joan and I, and then we will come back to the committee with an amendment to that section. But you must remember the words are quite soft. I think it says consideration must be given to and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but then even by saying such things, you signal, let's say, Momo's test of rationality and my notion of idealism, right? Which is not historically materialist-based, let's say. You just think you can voluntaristically do things when there's no struggles out there to bolster that, right? Momo's remembering his pre-1994 orientation, nodding his head. But he's using it to justify and rationalize his own neoliberal position. Yeah, so, you know, I don't think we can't see through you. Fine. Is that okay, John?
Yes, I wanted to just indicate, when we use this term, take into account, consider, there isn't some prescription saying, you know, this is what we think you should do. The way it could also be interpreted here, as an insurance company could say, you know, look, we've got to take this sort of thing into account. And they may then themselves incorporate issues like if you're retrenched and this, that, and the next thing. That's part of the, that's not irrational. What we're doing is asking them to think.
Okay, we'll try to strike a compromise there on 12.6.1, right? 12.6.2. Okay, 12.6.5. Cassisa said, no, this fellow from Cassisa, I mean, to be quite frank, he was, I mean, I want us to be frank, actually. Momo, switch off the mic, please. He wasn't credible, right? He's got his own issues. I don't want to give you an anecdote of what happened. He phoned me and he didn't even know what he was, which hearing he had to attend and so on. He's got a gripe with the courts. Now, people have a right to come to Parliament, whoever they are, and we must respect that. But, you know, we also have to judge what they're saying by what value they add to the transformation project we're talking about. And I think we should say no to Cassisa. Zakhele, do you have any view? Do you want to say anything in defense of this guy? Even if you don't agree with him, do you want to inform the committee about anything?
No, Chairperson, I do not have any view on this. I was just capturing exactly what... So I don't have a view.
Fine. Okay. Yeah. No, in fairness to people, whoever they are, they must be heard. And, you know, I read all of this last night, so that's why I'm quite familiar with it, and I can immediately reply. Others of you may not have had that chance. Oberholzer, again, it's really reinforcing what we're saying. So we can move to 12.6.8. Now, Oberholzer obviously supports the financial... You remember her, right? And we tried to help her with the problems between Frank Jenkins, myself, and I think Junior. And we did pursue it, and Frank, you remember we had to draw to a close, because remember the committee does not have the authority or power, and nor should it, to settle major complex issues between individuals and the banking institutions that we cannot resolve. They are legal and technical matters, and they are contractual obligations. We are not lawyers or commissions and so on. So we have explained that to Ms. Oberholzer. She's not very satisfied, but I think she feels we did try. But I don't know where she is right now. Alan, did she contact you again? No, fine, so we're not going to, she can't, no, I sent all of that forward, and finance came back to me and so on. Mr. Arges makes the point here, yeah, the concept, we've covered him, isn't that right, Zakhele? We've covered Mr. Arges, right, on both occasions. Then can we move to 12.73, at the bottom of page 11? Now, this is this problem, which actually, you know, Momo, you've got to get real about. I don't think the Committee on Finance, I hope the trade is going to budge on this. We agree there should be international regulatory reforms and so on, but at the same time, in ways that don't undermine our developmental goals in this country. So on Saab, can we say no, thank you? Is anything new there? Saab is saying what Saab would say, and what we know it has said. And we have taken all that into account. So can we move on, please, unless somebody has this thing about... And the Finance Committee has been dealing with the Twin Peaks model, and we've come to the majority of us to a decisive view on this thing. Then on the page 12 on the top, what is RDR there, Zakela, on line 3? Are you Zakele?
I think it's some standard within insurance called retail distribution review. I'm not too familiar with it, but it's a new standard which is being implemented within the financial within the insurance industry.
Just agree with Zakele, it is the retail distribution review, and it's essentially looking at conflicts of interest in payments of commissions and fees to brokers so that they don't treat customers unfairly.
Natasha, you had a problem, issue, you said what?
I just wanted to know, since when has it been enforced?
Chair, it's not yet enforced. It's a set of proposals at the moment. It's been consulted with industry. It has three phases. The first phase has been consulted with industry, and amendments have been made to legislation to try and implement it. So it essentially looks at where incentives are driving mis-selling by brokers to consumers, but it also looks at ensuring that advice is independent and sustainable into the long term. So it's very much in support of independent advice and the sustainability of the advice market.
Can you give us a paragraph on that?
Yes.
We would like you to report back to us. So on the RDR, we will insert something, a paragraph, right, calling for its processing expeditiously. The next one is BASA complaining about, it's a usual story, we're familiar with the huge cost. Now, obviously, we understand the cost of implementing the Twin Peaks bill is going to be enormous, right? And they're warning us that one changes in one part of the sector could have dire consequences in another part. And the interconnectedness of the financial sector. And so they're worried about the cost. So now, this matter has been addressed already, Comrade John, by our committee. The DA and ourselves disagree on this. Our view, in a nutshell, is that the cost overall to the benefit to the economy and the benefit to the financial customers and the poor and the disadvantaged weighed against 2008 crisis again. The banks can whinge and whine, but they brought this upon themselves largely through their greed, right? So really, do we really want to discuss this? And Basa, do you really want to persist in this day and age with that sort of argument? You know, after we've discussed it endlessly, you sit here all the time and you're still persisting. I don't think we want to agree with this. Do you really want to have a discussion on this, comrades? Colleagues? Right. No, we don't want to. Thank you very much. Because we've passed this now. We understand, by the way, Wahid. We're not naive. We understand the costs. But we've covered this in a thousand different ways. And in the FSR bill, the DA raised it again in the House, and again we had to respond to it. They don't agree with us, and it's a legitimate point of view, but the majority are clear, I think, across all other parties that operate in this committee. 12.76. Do you want to explain this quickly, Zakira?
I think it talks to the issue of this RDR thing again. We are saying that they have been working with other stakeholders in the industry to implement this standard or to deal with issues of conflicts of interest and the collection of premiums from clients.
Thank you, Chair. Just quickly, so we have met with the BAIC, and a lot of their issues on barriers to entry are regulatory issues. So, for example, the conflict of interest issues they've raised, I think we've resolved very nicely. It came out of this committee, which is very positive, is that the legislation says that nothing can be paid to a broker other than commission. And we've amended that to say nothing can be paid to a broker other than commission unless it is in the interest of black broker development in line with the financial sector charter. So we've made some amendments for enterprise development. So We've dealt with most of the BIC's issues, except for their comment on binder arrangements. That's where the industry outsources pen to a broker, and we have put in place governance standards to try and stop this from happening as much as it happens, because there's not enough governance and oversight, which has resulted in the failure of insurers. So we've introduced new governance principles before an insurer can outsource its pen, but they're applicable across the board.
Okay, comments on that? Where did you finalize these changes? When?
The proposed draft amendment will come out in this month. So
when did you like strike a deal or media?
Probably about 2 or 3 months ago.
Oh, very good, yeah. All right, fine, but then I'm surprised that they're bringing this up in the way they are. Can you just give us a report on where things are? We will coach you, meaning saying that the Financial Services Board in response said. So, Kelly, you got anything to say on this matter? Zakhele, I mean the team, Zakhele and Antonia and whoever else is helpful technically.
No, Chairperson, I do not have anything to add here except to say that if we could get maybe a paragraph on what has been done to try and resolve that, so that could be included in the report.
The next thing is the series of issues around the auto repairers and small black businesses more generally. Now, the first one is they're saying that there must be a phasing out. We're saying that planned phasing out process that allows black businesses unfettered access to enterprise development, affordable capital, and redirected. Look, can I raise something? Are they here, the South African automobile repairers? Are you here? We're very sympathetic, and your committee is really going to take this further, right? So maybe the three of you here from trade industry must help us. Of course, we support broadly what they say, but there's also this feeling I get from them is that there's a strong sense of entitlement. Let's just do these things and to hell with the rest sort of stuff. So I don't know what the committee wants to say. And in that regard, I know Momo's been, once they wrote to me in Sahia, because it's insurance. I know automobile falls under you and so on, small business, but because it's insurance, Momo's been facilitating. Now, the very last time they came here, they said they've been challenged in a court by the very same class enemy, so to speak. And I said, I can't intervene in a court process. When I said I meant our committee can't. We don't know what is going on. And they were meant to brief me, and they haven't sent me anything. What's going on? Who's taking them to court and why? And is it related to these matters?
I don't know about the court action, Chair, but we have been talking to them because this relates to them not being put to qualify on these panels. Okay. So clearly, I think that's what we've been engaging the industry, that you need to also empower small businesses and how you use them. But you also need to take into account what customers want. So, you know, panel beaters are service providers. You can't push people to go there. But, I think there clearly is a need for even, and we've been very strong on the short-term insurance sector for being too narrow in its approach. There's ongoing discussions. I'm not sure that you can compel anything, but it is something that we are taking up. We could certainly provide a paragraph or two if that's what's required by Zakhele.
Can you do that? All right, then we will look at it and decide what is the position of the committee, right? But Momo, we're not detracting from what we're saying there. We're adjusting and tweaking things to account for practicalities. But the case is quite strong. I think trade and industry agrees. Okay, the next point is that SAIA submits that directing more work to black-owned enterprises may be assisted here. But it says here, you see again here, the point they make is that this will inevitably increase premiums for policyholders. Can I remind members, our view is, yes, we have to take that into account, but no, we're not going to be intimidated by that all the time. But on the other hand, we are people who are relatively well hit. We could pay these increased premiums. What about the average poor person out there, lower income earner? So we can't just take decisions that make us feel good. We're very transformative, and who's going to bear the consequences? So that's why I keep urging a pragmatic, transformative approach and a phased incremental approach, rather than flinging ourselves into making decisions that undermine the very needs and interests of the very constituencies we claim to represent. So on that matter, Momo, I don't want to speak to you first. I mean, Mr. Lees, you're a person who might know about these things. Is this a genuine thing, or it's being used as leverage against any transformative efforts? This thing about, you know, constantly they bring this up, that the policyholders will pay more premiums, the policyholders will suffer. We expect them to say, but at times they may be right.
Jim, I'm not involved in the industry, and so one would simply have to look at it at face value. And
so you know,
I really can't offer
it. Does anybody want to comment on that? Okay, in that case, Momo, give us a paragraph. We'll look at it and see, right, because it overlaps with both the points we just made. Okay, on 12.78, the Charter Council, do you want to say, speak for yourself? Yeah, you are, so speak. It's the first bullet point on the 12.78. And the second one affects you. And the third one. So the first three bullet points, yes.
Yes, the Charter Council agrees with the recommendations of the committee to ensure that small and medium-sized black suppliers are actually given better opportunities for trading. So we also agree that the 50% target by the DTI is actually feasible and will also include that as we do the review of the FS Code. And we also just highlighted that in the draft amended FS Code that is awaiting gazetting, we have a scorecard for retirement funds. It's a voluntary scorecard for the top 100 retirement funds. It's also meant to be an introductory phase, which we actually looking at making it compulsory in the next phase of the charter.
No. Now, on absent point three, nobody wants to respond to that. Okay. Then the commission, are you here? Yeah. Do you want to say something? This is you, right? It's bullet point four on page 13 under 12.79.
What you are raising here is just around the enterprise and supply development program to say also as they were amending they should look, because what you saw that they were deviating downwards in some of the elements. So it was just to say that they should open up those areas because we can use enterprise.
We agree, right?
Yeah.
But do you want to reduce that to a fewer lines, about 3-4 lines, and give it to us, right? Okay, to Wickham and Debo Sapania. Right. And they will give you the email addresses if you don't have them. The next one, I think they're now talking about implementation date being brought to 2019 rather than 2021. And they recommend that the interim target should start in late 2017. On these issues, can trade industry reply? South African auto repairers. Mr. Nechitenda? The bullet point 13, page 13, it's addressed to you, really. You've been working on this with Trader and National Treasury, so both of you could reply. It's bullet point, the last bullet point on page 13, the Auto Repairers and Salvage Association. Page 13, my friend, at the very bottom. It starts with SA Auto Repairers and Salvage Association.
Because I was actually at this December.
You were there?
Yeah.
Okay.
This was between then the panel beaters not just the panel beaters, the tow truckers and so on. It was largely in the Western Cape, so it was held here. And they'd invited the major institutions, and between them they signed a deal. There was an issue then of also organizing others in the industry in other parts of the country, because they were not as organized perhaps in other parts. They wanted government to sign, but in fact the deputy minister at the time, Jonas, pointed out government couldn't come and sign a deal like this, and there's procurement and all of that. So, you know, they made their point then. They had agreed. I think they were talking to the deputy president's office as well. So, obviously, they have an MOU between them and industry. it's part of the discussions. If they feel it's not been implemented, in our discussions we can take that up. I think the issue of the 50% target, it's something, again, I don't know how big government garage is. It used to be big before. You know, so some of these things have changed, and they want each ESCOM and Transnet and so on to also deal with small black businesses. May not be a bad thing when you look at some of their procurement practices that's been in the bad news, supporting a particular family and so on, but this would certainly be better than the current option. But look, let me get the CPO's office to look at this issue. I had to say that, you know.
It's cathartic. Right. Now, basically, if I understand what Momo is saying, does the committee agree that we're sympathetic, but it's not something that we can take a decision on? Am I correct? That's what we are saying. Okay, so we'll draft something along those lines. In other words, what we don't want to do as Parliament, colleagues, comrades, is people write to us, we ask them to take part in hearings, then they bother to write to us, and then we just ignore them. Ideally, if there was the capacity and time, I would like Sakele and myself and Joan to reply to every one of them, but we just won't be able to do it. If it was earlier in the year, it's not now with the MTBP cycle. You know, I'd like to actually write to all of them and say why we accepted, why we did it before, by the way, John. On the first, between 1998 and for about 10 years in the committees I chaired, we did it. I used to do it myself, actually, because we didn't have the Zakele Shlopis of this world, Antonio Manimela, in those days. There was no research support or conference advisor. We had to do it ourselves. Okay, having said that, can we move on? I really think the Parliament should find a system, Zakele and Antonio. We must write back to people, really. Okay, the next one is, Sayer says it's possible. What's the setting stretch targets? What's that mean, Zakele? Look, I'm going to read all these things between Joan and me over the weekend, right? But it's just impossible to read everything. What's this meaning now? Is it flexible targets? Anybody know what this means, setting stretch targets for procurement?
Stretch targets, I think, are targets beyond what is prescribed in law. Like, for instance, on procurement, if the target is 25%, then you say it should be 50%. That's a stretch target.
Is that correct, right? That's the technique. Okay, then what are they talking about here, Zakele? What research? Should the research indicate the need for this? What research now? Who's doing this research? When is it going to be finished? Can you speak into the mic, please, for the record?
I think it's Saia that says it's conducting some research on this regarding the motor body repairers.
I don't know what we do about this.
To help you know, I think government can play a facilitatory role, and we've been meeting with the industry. They're all sort of a long set of issues that they've had with you know, the same MOA agreement. So let us come back and give you a paragraph or two in about how, you know, we can play.
What government can, is possible government, and we can put something in our report that says we'll hold you to account for it. Yes, Madam?
Yes, Chair, I just wanted to highlight as well that the Competition Commission has also been looking into this area, and they've come out with a code of conduct. So maybe you could, through Zakele, you can also contact them to just see what kind of research they have around this area.
Thank you very much. Busi, is it right? You don't have the stuff with you.
I do have the draft. I can send it to him.
It'll save us time. The poor fellow works over hard, right? The next one is skills development. The Charter Council, you want to speak for yourself?
We're just confirming that the skills development targets in total, they are in agreement with the generic codes targets. The only difference that we have is that our targets are actually concentrate are higher at the bottom and lesser at the top. So for junior management, our targets are higher, and for top management, our target is less. That is actually meant to ensure that we create a pipeline for management. So we'll spend more on the lower management to make sure that there is enough training so that we can be able to promote the managers up until they reach senior management.
Okay, I think we're fine with that. We'll note that in the report. Some of these things will not go into the recommendations observation side. They will, we can slide it here and there into the overall submission. Or we'll work on it between the two chairs and yourself and your team. Then can we move on to the next one? This is on ongoing consumer education, Zakhele. There's nothing there. We agree, right? Is that right? Is there anything there, Zakhele, that we can't see?
No.
Do you have any view? No. I take it you're not putting your hand up, so it's fine. Can we move to the next one, page 15? Is there anything, from what I can see here, this is reasonably consistent with what we are saying, Zakhele? Isn't it buttressing what we're saying? They're not challenging it. Am I correct? The two bullet points on the 12.83.
12.19.34. They are recommending some kind of an amendment.
Where?
You know, in upset on the second point that they are making, they recommend that the level status should be changed from level 4 to level 2.
No, that's something else. Where are you then?
On top of page 16.
No, we, my brother, are on page 15.
Oh.
Right, we are dealing with 12.83, 12.19, 34. It's 12.8, basically.
Okay.
It's on page 15. The point made by MFSA and FIA. They're endorsing. Am I correct? Does anybody see anything that we can't see? Right, so they're endorsing what we're saying, effectively.
Yes.
You're complimenting it. On
yes.
asset management now, that's where you're making the point.
Yes.
And that now I wanted the committee to comment on. I agree with them personally, and I think we have been raising this issue. It's an obsession of Freud Shivambu, but you know, I think most of the committee's also members also agree on this matter. We may not want to go as far as he says, but for the broad thrust of what he says, we've agreed up till now. And it's when we discussed the JSE, it occurred again in a variety of different forums. So I think it's reasonably consistent what the committee would want. But can I have your views? Or can we have your views? I take it then it's fine. Let's move on. On the level 4 to level 2, this I don't understand. I don't know, Joan, if you have a view. What does it actually mean, Zakhele? Explain what the practical effect of this is.
The recommendation that is made by the committee is that work should be given to firms which are level 4. They say that doesn't go far enough in terms of the BEE levels. You must put the level higher to level 2, because if you are level 2, you have to comply with far much more levels of transmission.
What is level 2 and what is level 4? Maybe the commission wants to explain.
Yes.
Because they know best. What's level 2, what's level 4?
Level 2, it means you have it depends though, because if you're exempted micro-enterprise, level 2, it means that you have a 51% black share. 51%. It will be level 2, or if you are a qualifying small enterprise, that means you're making over 10 million but less than 50 million. But then when you're dealing with large enterprises, you look at different, the five elements and how they score. But the level 2 then might also give you, they would have made, let's say, 109 points, depending on how they score. So it depends on the levels that the company is at. It's a bit. But if you're dealing with small enterprises, then level 4, it means you are at the lower end. Level 8 is like you're really not doing much for triple BEE. If you're level 1, that means you're doing quite well.
I must confess, this is quite challenging for me.
Yeah. Level 1, it means you're talking, you're perfectly
no, my
the sister, top.
No, I understand,
yeah.
But I just think it's not necessary for the Finance Committee chairperson to understand this. There are how many members here? If the rest of you understand it and want to do it, let's just do it. It's your area, Joni.
No, I'm having no problem.
All right, fine. So anybody got any objections? I hope we know what we're doing here, because I don't. And there's no rule that says a chairperson, especially when it's a joint chair, has to understand everything in a 120-page report. Frank, am I right? Does any rule say that? That the chairperson or co-chair has to understand everything in a 120-page report? Okay, there's no such rule. Fine, let's move on. Then don't come back to me, colleagues, when we get slammed and so on. And then they'll say, Ravija will ask me, why did you move chairperson for? I say, no, it wasn't me, it's Comrade Joan Fast. I have twice in the media said, I don't understand this thing. The committee decided. You will recall in the property, or you will recall. I have twice said it. I said, actually, I don't understand this. The majority of the committee agreed. It's my job to facilitate that. Well, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to spin. That's not me. Okay. Asisa said that it's imperative that the revised... this is the point we've covered already. Yeah. EPSIP says, 12.93 colleagues, needless to say that the recommendations do not go far enough. Yeah, then it's the same thing, right? Okay, are we agreeing to this? We have to. Yes, my friend.
Sorry, Chair, I'm also not going to pretend to be an expert, but a level 4 or level 2 designation would be in terms of being able to procure services, so a pension fund, for example, wouldn't be able to outsource its asset management to somebody unless it was a level 2. So it's so that's what the implications are, and it would pertain mostly to government pension funds, so that's the issue, as well as private pension funds.
So what is the effect of what you're saying?
So they're saying if you want to be the asset manager... Can you hear me? So the implications would be that if a pension fund wants to outsource its asset manager to an asset management company, it would only outsource, if it complied with these codes, to an asset manager that had a BEE level 2 status. So it's a government procurement issue that would have the biggest impact on, because it would be basically saying government won't outsource its asset management unless it's to an asset manager level 2 BEE company.
From the point of view of the FSB or your own individual view, because you may not have an FSB view, what's your response to this?
I think there is a need to focus on development of black asset managers in South Africa. The question will become a capacitation issue. So if you want to outsource asset management from the government employee pension fund, will there be sufficient level 2 asset managers? I don't know.
You know, what is interesting, there was an earlier report, I think, from one of your members, and I also did something in trade and industry, and it became apparent from APSIP that there are quite a significant number of black trained, capacitated people, and they saying, well, they never get the opportunity for this. I got the impression when I first came into this that, well, we only have half a dozen of them, you know, only to learn that was not the actual reality. And there was this opportunity, and that some of them had even started up their own entities, if you like, enterprises. So somewhere the reality lies between the two. There are people there. They are highly capacitated. Some of them have been practicing in London. You know, I would have thought that person knows what they're doing.
Look, I think this one refers to state assets and their management. So again, you're going to get under the CPO's office, and it's how the procurement system works. And most of it, if you talk about state pensions, then frankly it's GPF. On the one hand, and so it gets to the PIC discussion. Municipalities and so on don't fall under that, so them, if you regard them as part of the state, who they use as their asset managers, again, you know, this could apply to them as well. I think on asset managers, Chair, you know, I know there's a lot of noise. I tend not to like any asset managers, white or black. Our issue is passive versus direct. Why do you need, you know, they're not geniuses who can outfox the market. The whole world's debate is about moving towards passive funds and so on. That's the one issue, okay. The second issue, of course, when you have, because these are middle men and middle women who make, okay, money like that. The other issue is, whoever has a fiduciary responsibility, people have trustees. They tend to make the decisions where they feel that X will provide the highest returns. Okay, so it gets back to the retirement reform. What's their role? How do they allocate how do they allocate their funds, et cetera, et cetera. So it gets into quite a complex issue. And obviously the lobby that's there, asset managers, be they this group or that group, is going to try and say, no, we want the job. So I'm just saying it's more complex than that. And again, it's something that we can look at, but I don't think you can have a must-be manage and decide on just one group of people, given that you already got the PIC. And with municipal pension funds, frankly, part of our reform is to consolidate all of them. And I don't think we need any asset managers in between, if you ask me.
Can't we have a soft version of this, Akira? Look, basically the process is going to be that Joan and I are going to now do all the amendments. All we want from you and your team is the background notes, you know, the decision. We're going to do it quickly over the next 48 hours if possible, and we want to go through it carefully and by the middle of next week or so start distributing to committee members. So you have about 10 to 14 days to look at it so that we vote on this thing. So I think leave it to the two chairs. We'll tweak it slightly. Consideration needs to be given to over an appropriate time frame, something like that, over a time frame. Is that a deal that we compromise like that? Because, you know, I'm being a bit careful, John, because I don't think all of us, and with due respect also to trade, we fully understand the meaning of these things. See, some of the things fall in your portfolio, some fall in ours, and we're not converging because we have different, in different spaces and different levels of understanding. Some of the issues are very technical. And then what we will do, Joan and I, is we look at the whole list of recommendations and find like a package deal, a phasing in. So it's not like a shopping list, colleagues. The worst thing we can do is have a shopping list, the ministry will ignore us, and nobody will take us seriously, right? So can you leave it to us? We will work on it. We're agreeing in principle. How we tweak it is something we will come back to you on. Agreed? Good. Right. Can we move on to mentorship? Saika supports this. Oh, that's surprise, surprise. 12.10.3, sir. That's right. 12.10.3, colleagues, page 17. All right, so I mean, we're broadly agreeing with that, right? Cooperative banks, is there anything there? Look, we've broadly done everything the cooperative banks want. As a killer, they're complementing what we're saying and adding, right? Am I right? So we can just draw out from them what they have said in addition to what we've got in the report. Is that correct? We've had a hearing, by the way, in the Finance Committee side. Because, right, and so we did what the report said we would do. We already met with them as we met with the JSE, right, from our side. Okay, can I think, can we jump to Jen, to 12.2 on State Bank, Post Bank, and Black-owned banks? Is there anything, Zakela? I can't see anything on page 17 in that column or that block. I couldn't see anything last night. Is there anything new that we need to take into account?
Something that I said when we did the presentation, I mean, the whole issue of state-owned banks, I think it's, when you say post office, post bank must get a license, surely you're not telling the South that no matter what, they must get a license, okay? The point is they've applied, they must go through the process. And when you have a process, you also, given our great record of good governance in state-owned entities, what you don't want is a corrupt board, okay?
No.
Let's not be blind to what's happening. There is looting that takes place. So you need proper processes to get a proper board, because if you now start having a bad bank, it will infect the entire banking sector. So just for the record, I'm saying put those as things in your report so that these are conditional. The other thing, too, is that we've got huge needs on the state. You can have 10 state banks, but you're going to put capital, and it's going to bring the same risk to any owners of capital. So You should also take into account other socioeconomic demands that we have to deal with.
All right. Momo, you said nothing new. Now let's
I
turn
know.
To page
I
105
know it's
for the
report.
No. Lest somebody misunderstands here, let me tell you what we are saying. What's the problem with this? The ANC's got a resolution and let's ask Mr. Terry Kanikum, NEC NWC member. Right? I'm presenting his case. 12.12.1. The committee supports the licensing of the Post Bank as soon as possible to provide affordable banking services and expand financial inclusion, particularly. Yeah.
I hope what Momo is saying is not a counter motion towards our resolution as the African National Congress. Because you are the main party and you can't oppose our resolution.
Public servant, I'm advising MPs, and I comment on suggestions. Now, just because you have a bank, you think you're going to have low loans. Is that at greater risk? I'm saying these things need to be examined. It doesn't happen that just because you have a bank, you're going to have cheap loans. The banks may not last very much. You've had an African bank, so... No, you're not saying that, but... that it's not obvious that you're going to get... Just because Postbank gets a license, you're going to get cheaper loans.
No, you know what, due respect now, Momo, you're abusing us now. We're not going to allow you to repeat what you've said so many times. And we hear it, by the way, 10 times more, Comrade Mantashe, than you do. So you're out of order. Now, yeah. And secondly, I think, Mantashe, you should make a proposal to Derek there, head of the disciplinary committee, to find out which branch. You better do it quickly, Mantashe, because... We don't know how long he's going to remain in the NDC, right? Find out which branch he is in, sort him out, Mantashe. Go to his branch. Right. Now, colleagues, lest you misunderstand, and Momo's being wildly off the market, I agree, and I think we all agree, we can tweak it slightly, but what he is saying is not what we are saying. It's just wrong. So... We are saying basically do it. The Post Bank should... Nowhere do we say they must just go ahead and license them irrespective. We never said that. Furthermore, we are being consistent as a majority party with our resolution, as Comrade Mantashe points out. We even say, at this stage, it would be better to focus on the Post Bank. And later, based on the experiences of the Post Bank, consideration can be given. Note the words, Momo, you're a mathematical professor. Mathematical professor, consideration can be given, it's very precise, to whether there is a need, for another state-owned bank, and what its specific role should be compared to the Post Bank. The operation of the Post Bank needs to be considered carefully, particularly blah, blah, blah. So we have not, in fact, the ANC resolution is have a state bank. We're saying, no, let's go for a Post Bank for now. At this stage, let's see how the Post Bank works and find out what would be a need for and what will its niche be. Is that the word, Kathy? Niche. Does that how you say the word? Niche. I can't pronounce the word, but it's N-I-C-H-E or space. So, Momo, we are being very conservative. The more I read the thing, the more you're prompting me and Joan to change it, yeah. But we will make the observation. Can you give us a 2 or 3 lines? You are right. It can become a conduit for looting and so on. But on the other hand, you cannot continue to have commercial banks dictating the way they are. What do you say, my brother? Yeah. So can you speak to your colleague there? Are you also a DDG? Yeah, you sort him out. You're all the same status. Yeah. Momo, you're provoking members to become even more radical. Thank you for that. The role of the Reserve Bank, we've covered this 1,000 times. What's wrong now? What's wrong, Derek Kanikum? What's your complaint? Only one anecdote this afternoon. You're giving me stars. You know, like the teachers do at school. Give you 2 stars and a gold star. Derek gets immensely irritated with me. I don't buy it. If he's right. I am very irritating to myself, so I can imagine to him. Right. 12.13.3. Ah, Mr. Mania's back. A little slow progress down. I'm sorry to say we were about to finish, but now we're going to be held up. Every little thing we question. Right. Now, look, there's nothing here, Comrade Jones, that we haven't even mentioned in our BRRR report, right? Basically, we're saying we think that, yeah, if you can't buy off the private stakeholders, shareholders, it's fine, buy them off. But you can't take money away from human settlements and social welfare and so on and buy them off, because they have no influence, and we are convinced as the two committees that is the case. On the role of the bank, we have said, yeah, financial stability, yeah, inflation, but hey, we need a discussion around broader socioeconomic goals. Now, here, they're saying, SARB is saying, not clear what is intended by the committee on this recommendation. Now, is SARB here? They've gone. All right. Zakela, just explain what they're raising here. Please.
Chairperson, SARB, I don't know whether they misread...
because we were very soft.
That the committee was saying, because the response was like the committee is saying do this.
Actually, we're softer than the ANC resolution at the policy conference, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Because so they said buy it off. And we said if you have the money, buy it off.
Exactly.
So listen, don't go further, because that's what I understood it to mean. I wondered if Unati, what's wrong with Unati? Did he have a bad day that day? Unati is so bright and alert, and he's here, and he's such a brilliant thinker, frankly, and he's a future Reserve Bank governor and that sort of thing. Well, unless a coalition of the extreme right and populist left, so to speak, comes to power, he's likely to be a governor of the Reserve Bank. They will probably have a huge fight about who the governor should be, should they? God forbid, not that I believe in God, but that happened. That was facetious, by the way, DA and EFF. It was not serious. Right, let's move on. Yeah, fine. Okay, good. Now then, can we agree that there's nothing here that's going to detract us from what we've got there? Right. National payment system. Yeah, we agree with MFSA. There's nothing there. Can we turn to page 19? The CBDA said that lawmakers in conjunction with customers investigate. Yeah, but that's fine. Zakira, can we get some, can you draft something and send it to Joan and me? There was no mention in the report of the banking platform and shares. Yeah, can you explain this, Zakira? That one I didn't understand. The bullet 2 under page 19 under CBDA.
I think the CBDA here is talking about its own platform, which it uses. I don't know whether to transact or what. And they believe that it should have been mentioned under their section in the report.
Section, just put it in. It's their right to speak for themselves.
Okay.
No problem. We've agreed that anybody makes any amendments to their submissions, the first section, we include it. Why is Katie looking at me questioningly? We said we don't judge people for what they say. People can come here and they believe that world socialism must take place tomorrow morning. That's fine. We write that that's what they said. But we're not going to recommend it. So that's going into the submission section. Okay, 12.15, 19. APSA, BAG, the matter regarding alleged foreign... So what? Doesn't detract from what we're saying. Then we move on to page 20. Right. Charter Council, you want to speak for yourself under 12.19, please?
Chair, I think this...
You covered this already, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, fine. Okay. The next one then is the bullet point 2 there under there, my friend. What are you saying there? Oh, yeah, you covered that already. APSIB said that a draft has significant shortfalls. Can you respond to APSIB's point, my friend?
We actually, somewhere in the report, we also agree that there are shortfalls, but APSIB also is recommending or is supporting the Charter Council that the gazette be done on the current sector code as is, and that we do the review within a period of 12 months.
Outside this thing and in our study groups. Okay, Asisa said in order to provide the security... Asisa is repeating. The legislating BASA notes on bottom of page 20. Yeah, they're saying what they've said earlier. We've conferred on that and we've responded. Nedbank on page 21. They want an evidence-led approach. Well, we have to some other extent met that need, and beyond that, there's not much more we can do. Mr. Adams, stuff is fine, radical, okay. I think, colleagues, we are done. Right, is there anything else people want to raise? So, on the process, here it is. Joan and I will work on this thing with the team. I think to be realistic, give us up till next Friday, but you will have a good... When do we meet again? Just give us the date. 8th of November. By the 1st of November, you will have the report. When we come, I'm pleading with people. I'm speaking on behalf of the two chairs. We are pleading with our respective members that we are not going to sit here and debate everything. In red tracking, or whatever color it will appear, you will see the changes to the report. We'll only focus on the tracked changes. And we will vote in one session. If we can do it within, maybe we can start at 9:30 and finish by 13:30, that's it. It will be what we must call, let's find a word. Joan, we need to think of a word. I was thinking of transitional report, but then somebody might say it's Trotskyite and get jittery and so on. I don't think we should do that. So maybe, Frank, you help us. Interim is what we had. We can say report one of two reports. And then the second report will be done by end of April next year, following a further discussion of a series of, or next year. I don't mean to be realistic about this. So, in other words, what we are doing here is not having a final report from our side, because we're not ready to decide on certain issues, like the balance between ownership, and we need to do some work around it. Joan and I will sit with Zakhele and the team, I don't know, when, maybe Thursday afternoon for half an hour, and ask you to do some research. Now, the one thing we have already decided, Comrade Joan, between Frank... And, you know, old Zakhele is a lawyer too. But I don't want to burden him too much because he works bloody hard like Antonia. The thing is, we want you to tell us what is the experience in the mining sector. We've raised this about 6 months ago in a different context when we had the hearings. We now want to look at it and look at the lessons we can draw from there. And Momo covered that earlier. That's in my notes, Momo. I hadn't forgotten about it. So can we do some work? Now, you can engage with Treasury, but don't be coerced by them into any direction. You can engage with them for information, the Department of Minerals and Energy. If you need any help with the chair and the minister, I'm happy to facilitate that. And so is Joan, I'm sure. Right, so can you work on that? That's the one project you have to do. Yeah. Sorry, Zakhele, what do you want to say?
What exactly, Chairperson, do you want us to look at on the experience of the mining sector?
It works.
Yeah, because one thing to consider is that the mining sector does not have a charter.
You come with all those, you and Frank come with it. Let's discuss it now, okay? Why is Antonio smiling? Do you want to say anything about why you're smiling? Oh, no, okay, right. That's done. Can the members of the trade industry please, first let me thank you, not that I mean it, but thank you very much. Right. Now, can you please go? Because we have to deal with issues, you know, that DA. You have a good DA member in your committee. Oh, he doesn't come, does he? Mr. McPherson, where is he? I've never seen him. Yeah, no, we know that. Okay, fine. We've got problems here. We don't want to take one of them with you and go. Okay, right. Okay. 50% of the problems gone. Right, okay, can we come back to the BRRR now? Have we sent out Alan, my friend? We'll send this out, right, to everybody. Can you look at the letter from the minister on the staff issues? And Frank, can you take us through it? Mr. Lees, I didn't get your amendments. Remember, you're supposed to give it to us by 2 o'clock. Maybe you forgot. You're supposed to have 2 amendments. But we can do it now. It's fine. Right. Over to you, Mr. Jenkins.
Chairperson, this is the issue of the minister.
You don't have to stay, Momo and Kathy. What are you going to do here? You can't have any say. So you can sleep here, but you're not going to have anything. Thank you. Right, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of the staff of the ministerial office, or the office of the minister, I think the easy part would be to start with the Public Service Act, where Section 12A allows Cabinet to determine a number of special advisors a minister may have. Of course, a minister, it's a wide definition. It includes MECs, presiding officers of parliament and so on as well, but I'm just focusing on ministers here. And that determination has been made, I think, in the ministerial handbook itself. Now, the copy of the ministerial handbook I looked at is dated 2007, but I saw two references that it was updated 2013, and that is the one that I've used. I spoke to Miss September, who said she has a later version. She didn't show me the later version. I don't know if there is a later version. But the one that I have on PMG, and there's some criticism when we look at PMG, but Chair, I used to be one of the founding directors of PMG, so I have faith in PMG. And they said it's still the 2017 valid ministerial handbook. And that handbook says you can have two special advisors. Now, in terms of the answer of the ministry, he refers to two special advisors. These are full-time advisors. And he has one part-time advisor. I think that is sort of an additional, I didn't really comment on that. The critical thing in his answer is that he says that there was, I think, 13 staff, which then increased to 14, and 100% sure. But the ministerial handbook there's no reference to the Public Service Act. Purely the ministerial handbook refers to a guideline of 10 and sets out which positions they must fulfill. And then on permission, I think, from the Department of Public Service and Administration, you can have additional. And, of course, if you have a ministry where there's various entities, perhaps that would be a motivation. And I'm trying here to look at the Minister of Finance, who would be the executive authority both of SARS, National Treasury, as well as South African Airways. So, Chair, all I'm saying in the email I sent to you was that is not explained. The minister is saying he is fully in compliance with the ministerial handbook, which might well be so, but it's not explained why and whether there was permission to go over the guideline of 10. Now that's, I think, the nub of my answer in this, and surely that can be explained if one just requests that information.
I understand what you're saying at the end of the day, so to speak.
Yeah.
You're saying that the ministry handbook says 10. But a minister can seek an exemption via the public service minister for more. Is there a ceiling? How many more? I just want to get some clarity, Mr. Mania. I see your hand. I want to just understand what is going on. And I can also ask you because you led the thing. So I just want to get some clarity because he's the independent advisor. Right. So can it go up to like, is there a ceiling, Frank?
Chair, I just want to look in the ministerial handbook. I think there was a ceiling.
Look at this. I'm beginning to think we can't vote on the report right now. So let's look at the ceiling, right? You see why I'm a bit worried? You see, it's about fair play. Meaning, once this thing appears in the papers, I think this week everybody's being ignored, right? Because there's this issue of the SABC and the ministerial changes and so on, right? And there's a public enterprises committee. But you see, what would be unfair, Derek? I know you get a bit niggled about these things. But if I have the time to explain to you, I'm sure you're going to agree with me because we share very similar values. You see, the thing is, I don't want a thing to appear minister lies to parliament, right? I mean, really, you know, by the standards of what happens in this government, regrettably, this is like small cheese, right? So that's why I'm a bit careful, and I just find it hard to believe. I'm not going to repeat what I said to the minister. This is small cheese. The real problem is the one Derek raised. Is there a parallel state, if you like, existing? And we can all have our views on that. So the second thing to ask you, would I be correct to say that basically what we're saying is, what you can agree on, we would like to know whether exemption was secured from the public service minister, but then the DA is going to ask for a copy of the letter and so on, you know. I mean, I'm tired of dealing with such a thing. Okay, can you offer me a way out? Or us? Let's have David first because he had his hand up. Let me understand you correctly. You don't know if there's a ceiling. Secondly, there's no evidence whether he applied for the public service minister's...
He doesn't need to. But it's a guideline and you're expected to say reasonably...
Oh, he doesn't need to.
No, not
I did have to apply. I applied, I don't know why, for staff in my case, and they agreed. I don't know why.
I don't know why.
It's not a prescription.
My information is that there are 17 people in that ministry. That's why I would go along with what you're suggesting. It's a guideline, and if you had one or two extra because circumstances warrant, if you
But fine, okay, okay, speak, because I'm sure he's gonna, he's fine with that.
His circumstances warrant it. I mean, you're saying reasonably close to a guideline, it's not a prescript.
You're right, it's a guideline, it's not a prescript.
And you don't have to apply permission to have that one or two extra.
Oh.
But you know, a vigilance department has two departments where I was more recently, science and technology. And they expect you to stay within that guideline.
Yeah.
If it really is the case, you would agree. 17 people, and this is all off the record, right?
Yeah.
Okay, 17 people, I've seen the names, Mama. 17 people are employed in that ministry. And that doesn't include Chwete, who was transferred, which is very odd, transferred into the department, but yet is the ministry spokesperson. So, you know, I would suggest that you write a letter to the minister, because I think, you know, his letter to us, you know, begs the response when he says, because he's misquoting the guidelines. The ministerial handbook. And you should correct that to say, you know, we received your letter. Just for the record, this is what the guidelines say, that the ministerial handbook says, and look at it. And so it's not a minimum of. It's the guideline is that these are the people, and it even lists the positions. You'll recall that. Exactly. And so, you know, I mean, so if for some reason, I used the example earlier on, that you may have two media people because of your, the demand of speeches is so formidable, so extraordinary, that you need one speechwriter just can't cope, it's possible. But at the end of the day, you just don't need to have seven additional people there, plus a ministerial spokesperson. But don't make it big. I hope David would agree. But I don't think it's a matter of going public on it, because in the bigger scheme of things, this is quite a small matter. But you should respond to his letter.
Yeah, he's enough first, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I must say I rather like the headline, Minister Lies to Parliament, but why don't we, which I think in fact is the case, but why don't we, as a compromise, choose a different headline? Minister asked to explain to Parliament. And I think that there are really three, if you like, factors. Yeah. There are three factors that have to be explained. First of all, I mean, a reading of the handbook is clear. The guidelines are not there for, there's no explicit reference to minimum or maximum, but the guidelines are clearly and implicitly, pointing to the maximum number of staff. That's the first point. The second point is that the total number of staff permitted in terms of the handbook for the ministry and deputy ministry combined is 16. What we have here is, in fact, 17 staff members plus three seconded staff members, which makes it 20 staff members. So that's the second element that needs to be explained. The third element that needs to be explained is the number of special advisors. The number of special advisors permitted in terms of the Act is 2, and the Act is very clear, whether full-time or in a part-time capacity, and the minister has 3 special advisors. That is a third breach. On the evidence produced by Mr. Harnacom, there's a possible fourth breach in that one has a Halley's Comet-like ministerial spokesperson, a ghost worker of sorts. So that's a fourth element that needs to be explained. And the fifth element is how, given this evidence, does the minister conclude, and on what basis does he conclude that that all of this is within the guidelines? Oh, and materially, Chair, it doesn't appear to me on reading it's clear that more ministerial advisors might be permitted if authority from Cabinet is granted, but there doesn't seem to be any discretion in respect of staff members in the ministry. The structure of the office must be condoned by the Minister of Public Service and Administration, but it doesn't seem to me that there's discretion. I'm not sure, I might be mistaken.
Why can't we simply say that something like this, we can even word it here, but I'd rather, you know, we adjourn and we need two more people to vote. Only one, two, three, four, five, we need one more. So are you giving the mandate? What am I going to do? What agenda have I got? So something like this, that the committee's understanding of the ministerial handbook differs with the ministers at this stage, and the committee has mandated the chairperson to pursue this further with the minister. Will stop, something like that. So it leaves it open, because I want to tell you something, Derek.
Thank you.
can't, you know, just look at the level of salaries. And they are way out of, you know, junior people are earning more than, earning sort of chief director salaries. Now, this is, you know, this is bad governance, bad practice. We are responsible for one department. So we are watching them as we are meant to be doing. I'll just be oversight role. And they have to be, and we would expect one above all to be setting a handstand.
I agree with all of that. I'm simply saying.
So it's a bit, the picture is a bit worse than it simply looks. It's not like two or three extra people. It's lots of extra people.
There's a bit of a correction in the cash.
A little correction on the special advisor. You can, but you just don't know the details. You can have the equivalent of two special advisors by, let's say, a three-day-a-week arrangement and a two-day-a-week. You can.
Yeah, you can do that. All right, the general reason is, like, what do you want to put in the report? Everything you said,
yeah,
I
think.
But what I'm saying is, can't we just go through that process? If somebody else wants to draft the letter, so
no,
I'll be happy. It's fine. I'm going to draft this letter. Somebody else on the policy of drafting the letter against them.
That's the way you're proposing it.
On the street of the insert letter, there's the only outstanding matter, as far as I can see, is Mr. Lee was supposed to come back to us on action. I'm just going to give you more or less what I've said, which is that the committee's understanding of something like this. The committee's understanding of the Ministry of Handbook differs at this stage with the Minister. And the chairperson of the committee is mandated to write to the Minister to raise it to the front. Yeah. Right. And we'll reply within 14 days. Right. I really think, you know, the man is high at human level with the NCDPS. You know, we write an endless thing to give.
Fine.
Can we just do it after next week? So we'll have a week.
You will write them after the determination.
Yeah. But why don't you guys just send me some notes? Yes, just send me some notes by tomorrow, sir. 2 o'clock. Bullet points, what do you think I should ask him on your behalf? And then I'll drop it and send it to you. So you look at it and then by next week. After the interview,
you might twice as awkward as has also sent a question.
Oh.
And, you know, I think he has received the written reply and not done it. But maybe you can just touch base with Floyd.
Yeah,
that.
Okay. I'll give you contact me. Okay, fine. Right, fine. So basically what I'm saying is, Sam, I know
you don't have to answer, but since you are here, if you feel you want to, in fairness, unless the committee disapproves, we've allowed parliamentary liaison officers to speak in most committees that I've been in, so unless they're objecting, in fairness, do you want to say anything? Do you know something? That will help.
What I can confirm is that Floyd is true. He asked a question based on the ministerial staff.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether that is going to be enough if minister submits that. That is going to resolve whatever that we are raising now.
No, it won't help us because
that's a separate issue. Presumably what he's going to say there has to be consistent what he's saying, yeah. Otherwise that creates further problems. Then they can have bigger
obvious
problems.
Yes.
Sorry?
It's a public, that written reply is a public one anyway.
Yeah, but I mean hopefully it's consistent what he's saying, yeah. Otherwise it's going to create even further problems. Oh, since. So why do we get obsessed with the thing? Just leave it the way it is and I'll do the job. So we're going to, all of us, EFF, DA and the committee do the same thing. 1 hour later. Oh my. All right, fine. Okay, then. After it, right, under 8-9. Or do you just want to leave it to me, right? Which is, having now taken a decision, he drafted a small press release which I issued, right? Where he's basically saying, I can read it to you. He's basically saying, I just want to insert that in here. He says, I just use his words largely. Let me find it on legality. Okay, so this is what we've got. The Standing Committee on Finance considered a legal opinion from Parliament's Legal Services Unit on the use of the minister, blah, blah, blah. Now, this is his words. I haven't changed a single word you've given me. The legal opinion noted that Section 16 is intended to be used in circumstances where good financial planning and management could not avert the need for exceptional or unusual expenditure. The use of this provision by the Minister of Finance for the reasons set out in the report to Parliament and the AG does not appear to be exceptional or unusual, as the expenditure was foreseeable and has been made in the past. Clearly, there was a need to authorize the expenditures. A default on the debt obligations of SA would have been serious prejudice to public interest. However, this should have been done by way of a special appropriation bill. Whether the use of Section 16 was irregular or unlawful in this instance must be considered by the AG. So we just insert that in. But I also went on to say, I don't know how it's been covered by justice, something to this effect that there was no decision that the legal opinion does not conclude. I sent him, I don't know how he used it, right? That was definitely on. It says it may be so. And it's the Auditor General's office to decide on this. We will now refer the legal opinion to the Appropriations Committee to process further. Then I simply took that excerpt out from the one I sent you last week when Derek was there and said that while the majority, meaning excluding the DA, while we understand we would have preferred an appropriation bill, we accept that it was necessary to do it, which I think to some extent may or may not overlap with the way you think. You're unhappy with the legality of it. So what we are saying is, Frank is saying, it could be irregular, it could be unlawful, the AG must decide. Is that a summary? We just repeated that. And so we'll just put it in the report. So if that's done, then, you know, I can do everything by, let's say, an hour's time, but I would rather, you know, unless you don't trust me, I don't know what agenda I'll have in this stupid report doing, why don't we just vote on it? How many have we got? 3 and 5. And then I'll email it to you. If you're unhappy, we reconvene tomorrow at 1 o'clock and we make the amendments, right? How about that? So we vote now, we can re-vote tomorrow if you're unhappy with the amendments. We'll do it in tracking. Yes, Mr. Mania.
Thank you, Chair. I was just revisiting my notes from this morning, and there's one aspect that I didn't raise, which I should have, and I apologize for that. I'm not sure if it's appropriate to go into this report, but this committee has repeatedly raised questions about contingent liabilities and requiring the... That's fine.
So okay. Many times. We don't disagree. Actually, I don't know why you make it a big issue. We are also concerned as the ANC about contingent liabilities. Who wouldn't be?
I'll raise it then. But
we're going to repeat the same thing in every report. It's boring. Then they don't pay attention to us.
But I'll tell you why why I'm sort of fixated on contingent liabilities, because the truth of it is, and I was traversing the documents again last night. I mean, we as a committee have asked National Treasury to disclose contingent liabilities quarterly. They're not doing it.
They did give documentation after each time, twice, right? Remember, we got the documentation.
We did.
Nobody reads it.
No,
maybe you do, but nobody reads it. But so what's your point?
My point is this. I do read it. And what they're doing, what National Treasury are doing, are in fact disclosing the contingent liabilities which were disclosed in the main budget for every quarter. That's what they are doing.
Yeah, well, our researchers should be looking into that. Fine. So what we got to say then, this doesn't fall under, we didn't discuss it. It's nothing to do with it. Yeah. In the MTBPS report, Zakele, can we take this into account? And then in the quarterly report, you and Antonio must check these things. Okay? I just look at the globular figures, and I look at, you know, what was the last time, and I don't always get to do it. So that's something our researchers should be apprised of. And if it's the case they're doing that, then Mr. Mania or any member of this committee, including the parliamentary staff here, should raise it and say, hey, you guys are messing us around. Fine.
And actually, precisely because National Treasury are giving us the runaround on contingent liabilities, the runaround on cost containment, and the runaround on the public service wage bill, this letter irritates me. That's why, I mean, part of the reason I think it's so important. I mean, this letter is just... I mean, frankly, I think it's deliberately misunderstanding, bending the rules, misleading this committee, and I think it's very serious. Anyway, now that I've got that on my chair...
I don't have to get obsessive about it, frankly, but the point we're making is that this thing about contingent liabilities, really, it's not a criticism of the staff, right, because they're overburdened, but it's something we need to be alert to, right? You've raised it, and I think you should raise it as a chair. I have no choice. But even as a chair, I don't have a choice. Often I do things I don't want to do, and that is a chairperson's job. You cannot BS us. That's the only word I can use, right? Sam, please take this back to the DG. In fact, I'll give him a ring. Just remind me thousands of things I have to do. Only on weekdays, I just stop on weekdays. Saturdays and Sundays, I've got political work. So if I can, within the next few days, I'm ringing the DG and telling him that, look, can you do me a favor? Write me a short letter. I will forward it to the DG and the minister and say the committee has been alerted to this, and we request the DG and the minister to be, again, it's MTBPS period, I'll give it to them next week. Right. But can you raise it in the debate? Not debate. On the Thursday, we will have hopefully the minister in the presidency and the minister of finance, right? The minister in the presidency will deal with budget priorities. I'm negotiating for him to be here. And the minister will deal with the, the budget. Now, there you can raise it. If it's accurate, of course, I can't say.
Chair, let me put Treasury on notice. I'm going to ask the minister to discover all the current information about not just about contingent liabilities and other contingent liabilities. I want the current figures and a breakdown of every single contingent liability. And God help Treasury if they don't get it right this year. Please quote me to the DG. I will then go to war.
I'm trying to say. All of this is really unnecessary because the committee has agreed that, and the chair has no choice about it, that the Treasury cannot do what it is claimed it is doing. And if the staff had more time, they would have picked this up. Secondly, that we even told Mr. Mania, write a letter. I don't know any other ANC chairpersons would do that. Write the letter, I'll forward it to them. I'll be human and sensitive and give it to them just after they present the MTBPS, because ministers go into, the story, Derek, from Thursday onwards, and for a new minister, whatever they may think of him, let him do his MTBPS, right? So, now you're declaring war and all that. You see, this doesn't help, but fine, that's Mania, you'll never change. And, he declares war every 2 weeks, so nobody, the boy cried wolf, But he laughs, he thinks it's a joke, but then there are journalists who pick these things up, then they phone me and ask me, what do you think of it? I've got no time. Thank you very much, everybody. Bye.
Thank you, Mr.